Hello everyone and welcome to the Nutrition Nourishment Podcast, a podcast where I talk with my guests through their nutrition journeys. I'm Amelia and your host of the Nutrition Nourishment Podcast. I'm currently a student nutritionist, recently graduating from the University of Leeds in Food Science and Nutrition with an international year. And I've just begun my master's at UCL in Clinical and Public Health Nutrition. While I am working towards my accreditation, I am not yet an accredited nutritionist. Nothing which is said on this podcast should be taken as personalised nutritional advice. If you would like nutrition advice, you can contact a registered nutritionist or dietitian or your GP. Other resources available to you include the NHS and the BDA websites. Now, let's get on with the podcast. Today I am joined by Jasmine and I cannot wait to share her journey in nutrition and dietetics with you. Jasmine is a registered dietitian who currently works as a senior specialist community dietitian. We talk today about Jasmine's passions and experiences and about how she got to where she is today, including a great story which just shows us all to take a chance and to try our best. Welcome to the Nutrition Nourishment Podcast, sharing our journeys. Hello, Jasmine. How are you today?
I'm very good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining me. I'm really excited. After our chat the other day, I can't wait to learn more about your journey.
Perfect. I'm looking forward to share.
So before we delve into nutrition and dietetics, would you tell us a little bit about you?
Yeah, so my name is Jasmine Carbon. People call me Jazz for short. I'm a registered dietitian, currently working as a senior specialist community dietitian based in a South London trust. I also have my business called Carbon Nutrition and Dietetics, and that has the goal of providing nutrition and food advice to patients either on face-to-face, one-to-one basis, or in groups. In terms of dietetics, I have a special interest in Afro-Caribbean diets and particularly how it can be used to prevent and manage diseases. I guess in my spare time, I am a massive foodie. I love going to different restaurants. I love traveling, trying different foods. I love buying different foods. I love cooking. My presentation isn't great, which is why I don't post a lot of food pictures on my Instagram, but the taste is always there. I definitely enjoy food.
That's definitely what's important, the taste. And you sound really experimental in the kitchen. Do you like trying different recipes or do you make up your own?
I'm not really a recipe person, so I would read a recipe and I would nearly always not follow it. So I kind of get the ingredients together and I'm like, okay, right, I've got it all together. Now I'm going to make it look as close to the picture as possible without following the method too much. I tend to try to buy different ingredients, so it might be something seasonal and make something interesting with that. Or I see different fruits that I haven't tried before.
Yeah, the first thing I thought when I heard about paneer, I was having a curry and I just thought, oh, cheddar cheese melted in curry just sounds gross. It's not cheddar cheese though at all. And it's so good. And it's always really exciting to find those new foods. And it's now a staple part of my diet.
Perfect. And it also is good to experiment. So when someone does describe that sort of food, be it in consultation, exactly what they're talking about, and it's like, I know paneer.
Yeah, I like that way of looking at it. So it's great to know a little bit about your passions and what you're interested in now, but what inspired you to study nutrition and dietetics?
Okay, so a lot of things. I would probably say that it started off with my family, my mum particularly. She's type 1 diabetic, so I've always, I guess, grown up eating a relatively healthy diet. So a lot of the foods that we ate were homemade, so she always did kind of homemade cakes, pies, quiches, any sauces that were made. She made them from scratch. She's always tried to do mayonnaise, ketchup, pickle. A lot of it has always been homemade. And as I got older, she kind of explained that the reason why we eat that is because when she started cooking for herself as an adult, she had to make sure that the foods that she was eating would help manage her diabetes. And I thought, I didn't realize that. But I guess that kind of started off my interest in food and how it can affect disease and how it can manage and control disease.
That's so interesting.
Yeah, no, I think it is a very inspiring woman, I would say. I'm not being biased at all.
Amazing.
So she's definitely been my inspiration into understanding and appreciating food.
I would say kind of food in itself is a massive, it's got great importance kind of in my family and culturally as well, whether it's an occasion, a birthday, it's always a massive banquet. So I've always just grown up loving food and always trying different foods.
Yeah.
So the fact that there was a degree that would teach me more about food and how it can be used to health, prevent diseases, I thought, wow, this is amazing. I have to learn more.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess that'll be the starting point. And then I remember being in college and not knowing what I wanted to study at university. I thought, do I want to be a doctor? Do I want to be a teacher? Do I want to be a meteorologist? It was very varied. I had no idea what I wanted to do.
And everyone goes through that, kind of that, there's so many things to do.
Absolutely. And especially when you've got loads of different passions, loads of different interests.
Yeah.
I think I've always been someone who's interested in the sciences already. So I knew I was going to go down a science route, whether it was going to be healthcare or... In fact, I think it was always going to be healthcare. I think someone knew something was always going to guide me into this sort of field.
That's so interesting that you always knew you'd be in a science route, though, and specifically healthcare. When I was at school, my A-levels were in chemistry, psychology and art, and my AS was in history. And I was torn between the arts and science, and I just couldn't make up my mind. But I always say that I think nutrition had a little bit of everything that I wanted in my future life. So your family played a big role, especially with your mum being a type 1 diabetic, but also it seems that food was such a celebratory occasion, and that might have had an influence on how much you love to cook. Were there other thoughts of inspirations that guided you to studying nutrition?
Yes, there definitely was. I had a few other milestone moments that pushed me into dietetics. I originally wanted to be a doctor, so I considered studying medicine.
Wow.
And I was lucky enough to do a bit of shadowing whilst I was in college with some junior doctors, and I realised it wasn't for me. But in doing that placement, I got to see dietitians at work, and I thought, but this looks... It was nice to see them in action. At this point, I didn't know that dietitians could work in hospitals. To be honest, I didn't know anything, really. I just saw them in a hospital, saw that their name badge, dietitian. I thought, wow, okay, this is something that I could really pursue. And then I went to do another work placement, and I actually got to shadow some dietitians. This was before London put the cap on shadowing dietitians, so I was quite lucky. So I'd say quite fortunate that I had family working within the hospital setting who knew a consultant, and the consultant put me into one of their clinics, and it was a cystic fibrosis clinic. It was during one of my half terms, actually, and I was only there for a week, but I basically shadowed this consultant and saw him review all the different patients on the ward and in the clinic. There was one day where he said, I had the option to either stay in the clinic while the other healthcare professionals came in, or I went with the consultancy. And I thought, oh no, I want to stay. So I met, so I had the consultant review, there was a physiotherapist review, specialist nurse review, and a dietitian review. And at that point, again, I was just like, wow, I really now get to see a dietitian up close and personal, giving advice. So yeah, again, I was just in awe of how much.
That sounds like such a valuable experience. And I think you've just highlighted such an important point. Sometimes asking your friends, your family, anyone, could they help me out? Because sometimes that really helps knowing someone at the place.
Absolutely, definitely. So yeah, just use any means possible. Definitely use your closest network. So your friends and family are your first point of call, because they'll introduce you to more people.
And now no one else can see you, Jasmine, because obviously this is a podcast, but you've had such a big smile on your face whilst you spoke about that first experience. It's obviously bringing back really fond memories.
Yeah, no, it was good. It was definitely a great day, a great week, actually. Yeah.
How amazing. And then that brought you on to choosing your university degrees. And what did you choose? How did you choose it? And where did you go?
Oh, great. Oh, gosh. So, yeah, at this point, I definitely knew I wanted to do nutrition and dietetics. I thought, right, what's the streamline, the fastest way I could do it? And it was, to do that course. I live in London. I'm from London. And I wanted to stay as close to London as possible, but also wanted to move out to have the full uni experience. So I went to three opening days. I went to the University of Surrey opening day, University of Hertfordshire, and Nottingham open day. But yeah, I remember going to University of Surrey's opening day, really falling in love with the campus, where I want to be. Yeah, did the whole application process and there was a, well, not a mishap, but I didn't get quite the grades I needed to go to my first choice. I was really disheartened. I remember on the bus crying to my mum, being like, I haven't got in. And then I was considering, right, okay, what do I do instead? Do I take a nutrition course? Do I defer? I had all these things going through my mind. I thought, okay, no, Jasmine, just calm down. You don't know what's what yet. Just take it easy. Yeah, got home, found out, luckily got through to UCAS eventually. And yeah, they gave me the good news. I got into the University of Surrey. So
amazing.
It worked out well in the end. Everything. It was amazing. I mean, I'm a massive advocate of University of Surrey. I loved it there. I had a really great time. I've made really close friends there. So within the university, I tried to partake in as much extracurricular stuff as possible. I joined the Nutrition Society. I joined the Netball Club. I joined the Biomedical Society as well, because in first year, the whole biomedical science faculty, a lot of our lectures were mixed. Mm-hmm. So it's just getting everyone to the same level. I think it was just a chance for me to meet as many people as possible, really. Yeah.
That sounds amazing. And you've really got that point that university, it's definitely for the academia, it's definitely for becoming qualified, but it's also for making friends and learning who you are. And you clearly got both of those, especially with doing all of that extracurricular. You really got involved. Have you continued playing netball or anything since?
Oh, I tried. So I moved to Sheffield for a bit. I guess we'll talk about that later. But I tried to find a netball club there, and I did 1 to 2 games. And then when I moved to my current job, the department created a netball team, and that was amazing. That was really fun. So I think we played netball for about 4 months. Yeah, and that was one of the ways I actually got to meet a lot of colleagues, a lot of them that I didn't necessarily would have met if I hadn't had played netball.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't do it at the moment.
No, but that's amazing. And as part of your dietetics degree, you did some integrated work experience. How was that? How was that planned? And what did you get up to during it?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So again, I think I had a very different experience. I'm not too sure how it's done now, but at the end of our first year, during the summer months, we had a month somewhere, so a month placement, that was A. And the aim of that was to really test the waters and to see how we would do in a clinical setting, because not everyone on the course had the chance to do a placement or work experience in a hospital before applying to dietetics. Mm-hmm. So that was really a good way to see for yourself, and I guess for the university to see, yeah, just whether or not hospital setting acute dietetics would be something you would want to do or not. And yeah, I spent a month in Jersey with another dietetic student on my course, and it was interesting. I got to fly out there, and we were based at St. Hilaire Hospital. Yeah, really good placement. So we did a lot of shadowing, a lot of information gathering we did then, meeting other members of the MDT. So it's first meeting a speech and language therapist. I remember it's the first time I got to see how dietitians and other members of the hospital team work together, and just seeing close up and personal how a dietitian would give advice to a patient. And then as you kind of go further throughout your course, you then the placements get longer, more complex, and you're given more independence. So at the end of your final placement, that's when you're expected to do the amount of work that you would do if you were employed. I think it was my third year of university. In the winter months, I did 3 months in Dartford and Gravesham. Again, a really great experience. So I learned a lot. I remember learning about IBS. It's the first time I heard about FODMAPs. Mm-hmm. And one of the dietitians there had just did the training at King's Trust. And I remember at the end of that, I had I had 2 elderly care wards. It was all nutritional support, feeding regimens. But yeah, I feel my second placement is kind of like the bread and butter. That's where you really learn the essentials of dietetics on a ward. And I had my final placement, and that was 3 months. That was the summer months of my third year. And that was 3 months in Worthing Trust. Mm-hmm. And that's my final placement. So yeah, that's where I was really going to everything I've learned in university into this. I was going to come out effectively a dietitian, straight in inverted commas. I think that was definitely my toughest placement. It definitely was really hard. I faced a lot of obstacles I hadn't faced in my previous placements I had to overcome. It really tested me. I didn't even say, but during my B placement as well, I was working a part-time job. So wow. I had my placement Monday to Friday and I was working Saturday and Sunday.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, and I was doing it for 3 months.
So busy. Did you have any downtime?
No.
You must have been exhausted.
I would not advise it. If you can avoid it, definitely do. If you can't avoid it, let your placement tutor know, let your supervisor know, because it does impact how you feel. You get to Sunday night and it's like, oh, you've just done a shift at work and you're now preparing, putting your placement hat on. Mm-hmm. And it gets to Friday night and it's like, right, okay, I've got work tomorrow. So it definitely was difficult. Yeah. I think it made me quite a tough person. It made me quite resilient. Mm-hmm. I don't feel I should have put that much pressure on myself, because yeah. I was emotionally and physically exhausted by the end of it.
It sounds like it's an exhausting experience. What great advice that you can share with people today to tell your placement what's going on, so hopefully at least people know and are understanding.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I remember my third placement, I was at Worthing. Yeah. I was halfway through and they were checking to see where I was at against my competencies. So we have like a framework.
Yeah.
So and there's certain expectations of where you should be, and I was falling behind. So I had a meeting with my supervisor and my university placement tutor supervisor. Mm-hmm. And they were just, you know, asking me what's going on in a nice way, you know, just basically checking to see how I was. And that's when I told them, oh yeah, like I'm working Saturdays and Sundays as well. And they were like, how are you managing? And I said, well, I kind of have to. Like, this is how I'm paying for things. I can't really quit the job. But they were really understanding, and they just gave me strategies to make sure I do at some point in the day give myself time to rest. Yeah, so that was really helpful. Yeah, so that was a good thing with my third placement. And I would say that it was really great that I did have a mentor during my third placement as well. So she was a dietitian, but not someone who was supervising me.
Yeah.
So she was almost, she was more a colleague than a supervisor. So she was someone who I could talk to and I could confide in. So yeah, she was definitely someone really helpful to have for my placement.
And have you continued to have a mentor since then?
So I would say not actively. I guess I have a mentor by default. I've met so many amazing dietitians in my current role, and there's just been a few. So for example, I really want to go into research at some point in my career, and I've got an amazing colleague, friend, dietitian who's done a master's, she's now doing a PhD. And I always ask, you know, how it's going. And I've asked when I want to apply to do mine, would you be there to support me? Can I come to you for questions? And she said, absolute yes.
Oh,
so,
wow.
So I've kind of got my research dietitian mentor. And then within my trust, we have one-to-ones with our team lead, or it could be with your manager. Mm. And I would say that in some ways, they become your mentor as well. So they're just checking that you're still continuing your professional development. They're checking that you're enjoying the role. They're checking to see if there's anything you wanted to do. Yeah, so it's really, really good. Loads of development opportunities. So I guess from a development perspective, yes, I've got a mentor. Yeah. I think it's important to have different mentors for different things. Definitely.
Yeah, it sounds great to have so many supportive people around you.
Yeah. I'm quite lucky.
Yeah. And just with those placements during your degree, it sounds like you really got the chance to apply your knowledge, which is something that I'm really looking to do in regards to nutrition. So what did you most enjoy across the three? What was the best thing?
Ooh, I would say the best thing, I think it was the independence. When you get to the end of your, kind of midway through, at the end of your second placement and halfway through your third placement, when you're given that caseload and it's yours.
Wow.
And you go to the ward, you see your patients, you talk with the nurses, or you're advising the doctors on what to do. You're like, oh, well, let me check my notes and know exactly what's going on.
That's so exciting.
So that was really good. And quite a proud moment as well.
And it sounds like you worked super hard throughout those placements and throughout your degree. So coming to the end of your degree and graduating, and you went straight into work, how was that? At what point during your degree did you start looking for jobs?
That's a really good question. I started before I graduated. So I think I started looking maybe May, June, because I got the job in July and I started in August.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was quite a high turnaround. And there were people on my course who were looking a lot sooner. And I think they were looking sooner because I know if they wanted to work in London, mm-hmm. or they were specifically looking for a hospital near their hometowns. I knew I didn't want to work in London. I think I kind of enjoyed my own space and living and having my own living space. So I thought, no, I'll look outside of London. Also, I wanted to, it was another excuse, another reason for me to not travel, but I really wanted to live in another city. Yeah. So one of my bucket list things was to know a city as well as I know London. So
That's such a nice thing to have on the list.
Yeah. I don't know where I got it from. Maybe I thought it was with myself, I'm not too sure. But yeah, so that I thought, right, this is my opportunity now to know a city as well as I know London. So I applied for jobs in Birmingham, Plymouth, Bristol. And then I saw a temporary job in Sheffield. And I thought, oh, Sheffield sounds interesting. I thought, it just sounds like a really nice place. I'm going to apply for it. And the interview, and I thought, okay, let's see where Sheffield is. And I was just like, oh my God, it's so far away. But I thought, actually, no, I'm going to go for the interview and see how it goes and take it from there. I remember taking the train, coming out at Sheffield Station, and there's, if anyone's been to Sheffield, everyone knows there's like the really nice water feature as you come out of the main station. I was, oh my God, this is so beautiful. I'm very easily impressed.
That sounds amazing. Even if it hadn't worked out, you went to Sheffield, it was beautiful. What great interview practice, just going and seeing what it was like.
Yeah, definitely. That's something that my friends told me. They said, even if you don't get what you don't get, go for the interview practice. So I was contemplating maybe not going because it was far. But then my friends, said, no, just go for it. It's great interview practice. And then you'll get feedback and then you can learn from it. So I thought, great advice. I'll go for the interview. I ended up loving the area. I loved the people who interviewed me. I got a really good kind of vibe off them. So I thought, actually, I really want to work here. And then, they told me I got the job. I thought, yay. So I was in Sheffield. I was meant to be there for 6 months band five post. And then they had a permanent band five post open up, which I, again, so I was a bit hesitant, but I thought I'll apply because I'm not too sure what I want to do. Yeah, applied to be there permanently, got that. So I was in a permanent band five. And then there was a post for band six. I thought, same mentality. Let me just go for the interview practice and see what happens. I got that and I thought, okay, this is going well. It's going very well. I ended up doing renal actually as of my band six post, which was something I never thought I would do. So that would definitely be another bit of advice. Just because you don't like the topic at university doesn't mean you won't like it in the real world in dietetics. Uh-huh. It wasn't my favourite topic in studies, but having the clinic and seeing the patients, absolutely loved it.
It sounds kind of all worked out once you got to Sheffield. It went from one great thing to another, and even if they hadn't been particular interests of yours before, doing the practical experience really opened your eyes to so many amazing different things.
Absolutely, yeah. And I feel just the things that I learnt doing renal dietetics, I still use today. And I don't see many renal patients, but the biochemistry advice, the medications, the just knowing a few foods off the top of my head that are high in potassium, phosphate and quick swaps, they're in my head and I can reel them off. So it's just really good information to know, really.
Yeah, that's really good. And so that was in your band six role.
Yeah.
And then what did you do after that?
And then I thought, if I stay in Sheffield any longer, I will not leave because I love it here so much. So I had to go. Yeah, of my family, everyone was down in London. So I thought, okay, I'd rather leave on a high. Things are going well. Let me think it's my time to go.
Yeah.
So I was looking for jobs in London and there was only community jobs popping up. I was just like, because I've always been in acute and I'd only done a week community placement in my studies, I wasn't too sure what community work would be.
Yeah, but could you just explain for us the difference between community work and acute work?
Yeah, definitely. So acute work, you're based in a hospital. So you're primarily seeing patients who have been admitted and you may also have an outpatient clinic. So it would be patients who have been referred either by the GP to a specialist clinic within a hospital, or it might be a patient who is part of a pathway. For example, they might be attached to we'll say renal. So they're seeing a renal consultant, and then as part of that team there's also a dietitian that they might see. So that would be an acute setting. And in the community, you're seeing patients who are not in hospital. So it could be in their homes, it could be in care homes, assisted living, it could be in sheltered housing. You could also be working from GP clinics. So that's the main difference. So you tend not to be seeing acutely ill patients, but that can vary. Also, some dietitians also see enteral feeding tubes in the community. So patients who have got a new tube, you know, be it a tube into their, through the mouth, into their stomach, or into their stomach, you know, for like through their skin. So that'd be a PEG. Yeah. And they're reviewing that feed at home. So yeah, anything outside of the hospital setting would be in the community.
Thank you for explaining that to us. So yeah, when you were in London and you were looking at all these community jobs that were coming up, what did you end up finding?
I found a post for a community role, and it was based on malnutrition prevention in Lambeth and Southwark. And I thought, okay, this sounds quite interesting. So it wasn't tube feeds at all. It was all oral nutritional support. And yeah, so it was kind of community settings, doing home visits, care homes. And GP practices weren't part of the role at that point. So I thought, I'll go for it. Again, see how the interview goes, you know, and take it from there. I was a little bit late for the interview. I ended up going the wrong way. It was a massive faff. Uh-huh. I got there eventually.
I know what you mean.
Yeah, just I had to take a taxi. I was going the wrong way on the bus for about 20 minutes. It was a nightmare.
Oh, that's so annoying, especially if you know that you're going the wrong way and just sat there.
It was horrible. And then I had to get a taxi. And I remember I just deleted all my tax apps off my phone. I was like, what am I going to do? It was horrible.
Oh, no. I'm also thinking a taxi across London.
Yeah, yeah. I think I was trying to save money, so I think I was purposely didn't have any cards on me. But the taxi took pity on me and let me have the ride for free, bless him.
Like, oh, it was so kind.
I was so frantic, and it was horrible.
But you made it to the interview.
I made it to the interview. I thought it was probably not my best, but I tried my best. Luckily, I got the role and went really well. I'm still in it now. I've been promoted within the same team, so I think I'm 3 years in the role now. Yeah, it's been an amazing journey. There's been so much development and change within the team. It's grown. I think it's quadrupled in size. When I joined, there was only 3 dietitians. Now we're 10, 12 and growing. There's so many.
That's exciting.
But yeah, no, it's been definitely a great journey. Again, with obstacles and definitely with loads of learning points and yeah, rooms for improvement, but it's been great.
Yeah, of course. And there's always going to be new things to learn. I think 2 things that I've just taken out from what you've said is, firstly, see how it goes, just go for it. And also try your best, because even though in that interview it might not have actually been your total best, you tried your best, and it obviously shone through. What a story to get to your current role now.
that's I guess that's the quick story.
So what does your current role as it sits today involve?
Oh, it varies week to week, day to day. I love that. It's within the role. So I'm still in the community based. I have a very mixed caseload. So I have 2 to 3 days a week where I see, also everything's now virtual. So what would have been home visits is now telephone clinics. So I have 2 to 3 days a week where I'm speaking to patients or their family members or their carers, providing nutrition support for be it malnutrition or pressure sore wound healing, or swapping them to a optimum nutritional supplement. So we get quite a few patients who might be on a supplement drink, but it might not be the most cost-effective one, particularly if they've just been discharged from hospital or if they've moved from one borough to another, to one of our boroughs, and they're on a supplement that we know we can swap for something that is just as good but cheaper, then we'll definitely do that.
That's really supportive.
Yeah, it's really good. I think a lot of people think that dietitians are all about weight loss and healthy eating, which is more often than not the complete opposite. We love to promote full fat milk, skimmed milk powder, but it is one of the easiest swaps to do.
Yeah.
And it does make a massive difference. So 2 to 3 days a week of seeing telephone home visit patients, and then I also have a day a week slash every other week where I ring care homes. Mm-hmm. So it's speaking with the nurse in charge or the care team lead, assessing the patients that we have in those care homes. And then I also have a rehabilitation unit ward in the community. So it's like a mini hospital, but in the community. Oh. And none of the patients that are acutely ill, they're there simply because they are in rehabilitation. Mm. So it's to get them back to their physical baseline. They might also be there because they're awaiting updated or a reassessment for their social care needs. And whilst patients are there, they are getting better. And a lot of them have been on supplements in the hospital they were at previously. So I check to see them, to check that if they still need the supplements, if they need different ones, or if we can work to wean them off before they're ready to go home. So I've got that once a fortnight. And then I also have a GP clinic once a fortnight as well. And it sounds a lot because it's spread out. And it just keeps it so, like, I love it. It just keeps it so varied. And on top of that, I do supervision with members within my team. Then there's service improvement projects I've got going on. I'm the BDA trade union rep within my department. Amazing. Alongside a colleague. So there's another project and in meetings I go to.
You must have a really busy calendar.
I love it. It's all colour coded. I love it.
That makes me so happy. What an inspiring role to have. You're doing so many different things and it sounds incredible that you get to help so many people.
I think I found my calling.
Oh wow, that's nice. We were talking about you were working in renal and how you discovered that you loved that. What, 3-4 years later, what areas of dietetics most interest you now?
Ooh, I would have to say I am really interested in Afro-Caribbean diets and how it can be used to prevent and manage diseases specifically. So that's something I want to work on and develop my knowledge on in outside of work. Obviously, the knowledge and skills I gain from that I do bring to work and share with my colleagues. That's something that I really do have an interest in. I feel like it's really important and vital to know as much information as we can really about the diets. I'm Caribbean myself, so there's a lot of knowledge I have already that I share with my colleagues, and I like to bring that in if I am talking to a patient who's from Caribbean descent as well. I feel like, again, it adds further to the rapport building. It can make goal setting easier sometimes. So that's definitely a field I'm definitely very interested in.
Well, I guess as well, every single person that you see must be so unique, and being able to provide someone with specialized advice is such an incredible thing to be able to do. And you've gone to do extra work to really be able to help your patients, which really is amazing. Do you have any advice of courses or resources that people could go and have a look at?
Absolutely. So I can't remember the name of the book off the top of my head, so I'm going to have to either send it to you or give you the link.
We link it into the description of this podcast.
Perfect. That sounds good. Yeah. So that's got some really good advice and not so much tips, but yeah, really great information on foods from around the world, really, and just getting an understanding of the different diets that patients have. There's also the Carbs and Cal World Foods book, which is really great. There's some really good pictures in there as well, so it gives you an idea about portion sizes of different foods. It's just really good to flick through and be like, oh, okay, I didn't realize this, you know, food was this size, when I get an idea of portions and things like that. I think if you do get the chance, just go to a different restaurant, look at different recipes, and just using your own initiative to use the internet as well to find out some more information on different diets, you know, outside of what you might eat day to day.
Yeah, it's quite amazing to be able to know and learn from others. And I think mentioning those world food books.
Yeah, it separates the book really well. So it splits into North African cuisine, East African, West African. There's definitely North, East and South. And then it goes into South Asian, Northern Asian, and there's Arabic foods as well. So yeah, it's a really good one-stop shop for a lot of different cultural foods.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for that recommendation. I'm definitely going to go and have a look for them. And I just wanted to bring us on to a final topic, which is your own business. Could you give us a little insight into that?
Yeah, perfect. So the reason why I started my business was really to kind of get myself out there more on social media and to try and be a bit more present in dietetics and kind of giving a bit more advice. Kind of want to do a bit more one-to-one advice giving as well, a bit more health promotion, disease prevention advice specifically, and just kind of, again, to further my own knowledge on what sort of advice I can give. And it's been a real mixed bag, really, of the sort of things I've done since. I've done a healthy eating of sickle cell talk for the Sickle Cell Disease Society. I've done a few like nutrition around sport with a boot camp. On a volunteer basis, I was present during a martial arts course to be there for like a Q&A session with parents and with children as well. They had to come out nutrition questions, any food questions that they might have had.
Firing the next generation.
Oh yeah, no. Whilst I've been doing carbon nutrition, I've also gone down the avenue of an anti-diet perspective. So the lack of need to follow a strict diet, exclude food groups for no reasons, and I guess also to kind of want to make social media a bit more of a level playing field in terms of what people are exposed to. And I think more people need to be exposed to safe and realistic advice.
That's so amazing. And just going back to your point, actually, about all of that, really, and it's that all foods can be part of a balanced diet. It's just working what works for you. I've recently been doing a lot more into a sustainable diet, and involved in a sustainable diet isn't just trying to reduce your environmental impact, it's also making sure that the diet is sustainable for you socially, economically, and all of those other factors. And also, just quickly on social media, I love that you said safe and realistic advice, because that's really important. And the fact that you're on there as a qualified healthcare professional, I'm part of the Nutra Tribe, and as part of that, I've organised these Nutra Chats, and we did a journal club last week, and we were discussing a paper, and it basically came to the conclusion that health will never get rid of the misinformation. It's always going to be out there. So healthcare professionals should be out there sharing their voice and sharing that safe and realistic advice.
Yeah, 100%. As many of us as possible. So, I mean, I've almost forced myself to be active on social media. I'm not naturally a poster and a retweeter. I'm really bad at Twitter. I'm really trying my best, but I'm not great at it at all. But I think even just something simple as having an account and retweeting safe and realistic advice, or liking and sharing and commenting and engaging in people who are healthcare professionals. I think it's really important for all of us to really engage and be proactive and support healthcare professionals on social media, as many of us as we can. So from students, from people who are considering nutrition, follow, share, engage.
Exactly. What I find really valuable is looking at someone like you, looking at someone who's qualified and been in the profession for a really long time, and seeing how you practice and how you share information. That's actually really valuable for me as someone coming into the field. So I really value that. And as you were saying, sharing that information, that you don't have to write it yourself or anything like that. Like, you can just share what other people are saying, because it gets the message out there.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, coming to the end, I do have two final questions for you. The first one is, what is next for you, Jasmine?
I would probably say to stop taking on too many roles, but I've got a few things in the pipeline I really want to develop, and in terms of access to food, I really want to work on. So that's something I am planning to do within work, and then within carbon nutrition, I really want to get stuck into maybe a bit more cooking sessions. I want to do more about promoting Afro-Caribbean food, and I guess not just the staple or the standard popular foods that we often see. It is quite a varied diet, and there's so many varieties as well. Like, each island has their speciality dish. So I'd really like to start sharing more of that and to get people really excited about Caribbean food. And then also just to do a bit more grassroots project work as well. So yeah.
That sounds super exciting. I'm really looking forward to seeing some of that, and I wish you all the luck with all those projects.
Thank you.
Could you sum up for us in a sentence, a few words, or a quote, any advice that you would give to people on their journeys in nutrition and dietetics?
Ooh, I think there's quite a few. I think what I've been saying multiple times throughout this podcast, which is just go for it. if you love it enough, everything will fall into place. And also, I guess, just believe, not, I don't want to say believe in yourself, that sounds very cliche, but I guess almost believe in your gut. If in your gut you want to go for a particular role, go for it. The things will fall into place. I think it's just a case of not being scared to try something new, not being scared to speak up if you feel something isn't right. It could be in your placement or in your or university or in your work setting, for your own mental health and for, you know, looking after others as well. I feel I've merged quite a few tips in one, but all in all, I think it's just about believing in your gut.
That's great. Thank you. And what beautiful advice for us. Thank you so much, Jasmine, for being here today and sharing your journey with us. If you don't follow Jasmine already, you can find her on Instagram at carbon_nutrition. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jasmine, for joining me today and sharing your journey and experiences with us. It's been a pleasure to talk with you and learn about what you love and hear the advice that you have. And thank you to all of you who have joined me on the journey of this podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, I am sure that you'll love next week's journey. So make sure to hit subscribe to be one of the first to hear. And if you love hearing about others' journeys as much as I love to share them,